bring the lesson again, and we'll be moving into a new phase in a way. We'll be talking about things to do to strengthen relationships after going through some rocky moments, and we'll show you a couple of illustrations that will kind of illustrate what we're talking about. We did leave on some of the tables, it looks like some of them are missing, but pieces of paper with a pencil. If you wanted to write down questions, you can fold it up and leave it on the table here, and we'll get to it next week. Okay, and then we did have some people that signed up for last week's slides. We've made copies. If you signed up for them, your copy is up here. And we'll do the same tonight for next week, and there's a sign-up sheet if you'd like copies of slides. Okay? All right. Okay, here we go.
So in review of last week, just to give a kind of a recap of what we were talking about, we were trying to explain, and it's really hard to do some of this stuff really quickly in an hour, but raw spots and rocky moments are those difficult times that we have in our relationships, whether it's with somebody that we're married to, our sibling, our parent, our child. We're going to have those rocky moments. Go ahead. So we need to have a plan to manage them with God's grace. So sometimes we'll have a plan up here, but it doesn't work very well in the moment. And that's why we're talking about a lot of this. It's because our head, we want to do the right thing. We want to make good choices. We want to do what we need to do. But oftentimes in that moment where there's a lot of tension or a lot of stress, it can be, I don't know, everything goes out the window or something. Something happens in that moment. And so that's kind of what we're going through these for. Oh, go ahead. So we're going to understand that often they're not about that current moment, but about a past event. So when we think about a rocky moment that keeps recurring, like every time maybe you go to a certain place for a holiday, it's very, very, very stressful. You'll know that that's something, there's something probably to that. That's a challenge for you, and you could work that part out. So go ahead. So we're going to allow, and this is taking us into this week, we're going to really make sure and allow for those ARE conversations to heal those rocky moments. And one of the most, I think, beautiful things about understanding attachment and understanding what it means to have a healthy attachment is that in those healthy attachments is where we heal. In those healthy, safe places with that other, whether it's, you know, your sibling or your friend or your who you're married to, in that healthy place, that safe place is where we can get better and we can grow and prosper in the things of God. So the topic this week is keeping love alive. And that's going to be, go ahead, that's going to be looking at caring for our relationships. Go ahead. And that's part that we talked about it before, but it's the ARE conversations. We're accessible, we're responsive, and we're willing to engage. And when we're accessible and responsive and willing to engage, it's as if we're turning toward each other instead of away. So if we're, you know, upset about something and we turn away, that is not an ARE conversation. You're not accessible if you're going that way and out the door. But if you're coming toward each other to resolve a situation or whatever is going on, it's accessible, responsive, and willing to engage. So they're very important for caring for the relationship, not just in conflict, but as you go. So we want to review and reflect on our raw spots, and that was what we talked about last week. But we want, it takes time to understand those recurring things that come up. It takes time to kind of tease out, is that something that really bugs me or is that something that keeps showing up? So you have to review and reflect on that, and God can help you to know and understand what those things are for you because it's different for everybody. So this allows for a quick detour back into safety, back into that healthy connection. So when we are having a difficult time, and we understand our raw spot, oh, this is the same thing that happens a lot right before, you know, whatever, or it happens during this particular situation. You can short circuit that spinning that happens where you're disconnected for a while. You know what I'm saying? So you're short circuiting that disconnect and allowing to come back and talk about whatever it is, or resolve it, or even just have a challenging conversation about it. So another part about caring, and we're going to go through each one of these tonight, is we're going to be understanding how important it is, and the saints are so good about this, is celebrating positive moments. And that's not just birthdays and anniversaries. These are moments that happen when we feel that safe, healthy connection. And we want to remember those because they're going to be important to us. We're going to take those with us on those bad days. We're going to say, oh, I remember when this happened. So that he probably didn't mean it that way. So also, and this is something that the saints are really good at, is spending that time together. The rituals of even just getting ready and going to church, having devotions together. Those things where your family or your friend or however your relationship is, you have set things that keep you connected, that keep you together, that keep you healthy, able to talk about the problems that come up. So the first part is, again, we're reviewing the ARE conversations because they're so important. And if we can get this, sometimes it takes a while. And so I wouldn't say that this week or next week you'll have this figured out, or even this month or next month. It takes some time. But we want to learn to be accessible. So if in the past we have a tendency under stress to turn away, we're going to train ourselves to turn toward each other when we're in conflict. And that takes some practice because, again, we talked about those raw spots. We have to understand those. We have to see how those could be cleared out. And as we turn toward each other and we're accessible and we're both on the same page, there's a lessening of the tension. So the next is responsive. These are kind of in review, but it's very important that we keep this going, because if we stay responsive, again, we're turning toward each other to solve a problem, or we're turning toward each other even to make plans. We're turning toward each other to discuss maybe what we're doing over the weekend together, or, you know, whatever your plans are. But you're turning toward and you're responsive. So it's not that you would be, you know, on the cell phone and having half of a conversation, which happens. Sorry, I do that. You do it too, but, you know. So that part of it, we have to catch ourselves, because we're in a day and age where there's so many things that attract our attention. Even the little ones, you know, they'll take our time, and we're focused on what they're saying or doing, and we're trying to have this other conversation. So we have to train ourselves to be accessible and to be responsive and to be willing to engage. And that takes practice. So this seems like, oh, again, we're hearing this again. But this is something that takes a lot of practice. It takes an awareness, and it takes causing yourself to turn, when you tend to go this way, to turn back and say, okay, you know, that I can feel some tension. There's something going on here. Let's just talk about it instead of, you know, and it's not that you mean to be unkind or whatever. It's just that sometimes we get so flooded with strong feelings that we think that's a better option. That's what I used to do. I used to think, well, it's better if we don't argue, if we don't have a problem, I'll just go in the other room and just. But really, I didn't even understand that I was being triggered. I had a lot of attachment wounds when I was growing up. I had a lot of trust things. I didn't understand any of that. But when there'd be tension, I would just think, okay, it's better just to leave it and go somewhere else and weed the garden, or, you know, clean out the car, or do something to separate so that I could calm down what was, you know, going on. But what I didn't understand was, as I turned away, he misunderstood that. He thought, you know, why is she turning away? And I'm thinking, I just want to calm down. But I didn't understand my raw spots. I didn't understand all of those attachment pieces that we talked about at the beginning. So those are kind of at our first couple of weeks. But as you understand more about that, you're better able to have these types of conversations. So this is the language of a healthy relationship. And like I said, it can be with your children, with your loved one, with your parents, with your siblings. A healthy relationship allows for that accessibility, that responsiveness, and that willingness to engage. One of the things about a healthy relationship, and when we say this is the language of a healthy relationship, languages have to be practiced in order to be understood. So I practice my Spanish before we go to Cuba by listening to CDs in my car December and January, and then we go in February, and I've been conjugating verbs and, you know, all this stuff in my head that I'm not very good at, and I get there and I can kind of just wing it a little. I know some of the words, I know phrases, whatever. But then I don't practice it. We get home from Cuba and I'm exhausted mentally from trying to think in Spanish. And the language doesn't come easily to me, so I drop it. And then if we go in maybe a couple of years, I start all over again. And some of it comes back, but I've forgotten a lot of it. It's the same thing with our love relationship. We have to practice it. We can't pretend to stuff it off to the side and that's going to take care of itself. We have to use the language. It's something that takes effort. One of the things that happens when we are flooded, and we talked about raw spots last week mainly, but this is sort of an example, and some of you know this little cartoon. It's about a little girl, and these little characters that we're going to see are emotions that are supposedly inside of her head. And so sometimes anger will take over, sometimes disgust, that's the green. Disgust will take over. Sometimes fear will take over. Sometimes sadness will take over. And there's this other little character, Joy, that is always trying to get everybody to, you know, whatever. And she wants to be at the helm. She wants to be able to help Riley to be happy all the time. And part of what we understand about that story is that we can't be happy all the time. That isn't something that's possible. God gave us all of our emotions, and He helps us to manage them, but it's not that we're supposed to walk around chasing butterflies our whole life. We have challenges. We have things that come up. So this little clip talks about how anger for this little girl gets at the helm and takes over.
What is going on?
He did it again.
We were at school, and we were naked, and there was a dog, but the back half was chasing him, and it was a big one.
You idiot. It was a...
That was, she's just waking up. The little girl is waking up, and anger is frustrated because somebody didn't take care of her dream cycle or whatever. But anyway, it's the notion of how anger shows up, and anger tries to take over. And this is how things don't work when that is in control and taking over.
What is going on?
He did it again.
We were at school, and we were naked, and there was a dog, but the back half was chasing him, and it was a big one.
You idiot! It was a dream! This is ridiculous. We can't even get a good night's sleep anymore. Time to take action. Stupid Mom and Dad, if they had moved us, none of this would have happened. Who's with me?
No.
Yeah, let's do it.
So he's putting an idea in her head. That's the light bulb.
She took it. There's no turning back.
So how are we going to get to Minnesota from here?
Well, why don't we go down to the elephant lot and rent an elephant?
Hey, that sounds nice.
We're taking the bus, nitwit! There's a bus leaving tomorrow. Perfect.
Yeah. A ticket costs money. How do we get money?
It sometimes feels like that when our strong emotions show up, whether we're triggered or we just feel really strongly about something. It almost feels like there's this other thing, you know, kind of at the helm. And we have to understand that about ourselves. We have to understand that anger is normal, but we have to understand that if it's flooding, that's probably not going to work out. You're going to have to step back and understand that situation or that raw spot. So here anger took over. He made a terrible decision. He put it in her mind that she should run away. She's a little girl. Run away on a bus to Minnesota. That is a terrible decision for a little kid. It's dangerous. She's all alone. All these terrible things. So anger is not something that we can always trust, right? It's something that it tends to spin, you know, and it gets too strong. So the point for this part is just as we're aware of those strong emotions, we can't always trust them. You know, when somebody, especially a little girl that decides she's going to run away to Minnesota, that's not going to work. But for us, if we get upset about something, we talked about it in the young married class. We talked about that inaccurate first draft. I don't know if some of you remember that. So many times when something happens, we want to make a decision about what we're going to do, or we want to make an understanding of what that means. And we just have a jump to an inaccurate first draft. And that's where we can see a strong emotion like anger sort of jumping us to a place where it's not a really great decision. It's not a good place to be. We need to back up and not trust that inaccurate first draft and realize that after we're going to get all the information or maybe we understand what's going on, we'll be able to make a better decision. So the ARE conversations are designed to help us shore up the safe haven of the relationship. So again, a healthy attachment, a healthy engagement with that other, whether it's your friend, your mother, your sibling, who you're married to, who you're, you know, whatever. When you shore up the safe haven of the relationship with those open conversations where you're accessible and responsive and willing to engage, it allows a safety in the relationship. There's a calming that happens for us. And we're able to nurture our ability to be flexible. So if you feel like everything's okay here, you can go out to your job or the kids to school or wherever you have to go, and there's a calmness there. But if this is not going well, it's hard to go out and do that work for God or have that job go well. So when we have these ARE conversations, it allows us to explore together because we feel safer to be able to talk about something. A lot of times, if we are avoiding difficult conversations, there's like boxes of stuff that isn't being dealt with in our relationship. And they're just kind of stuffed to the side because we're just dealing with right now. But if you feel safe enough to have these difficult conversations, there's a lot of growth that happens in the relationship. And there's things that you can do to explore new things together because you're not afraid. Sure.
So I'm thinking of when Jesus was speaking to his disciples and Peter confronted Jesus and Jesus said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." And so we take that Jesus was not necessarily calling Peter Satan, but that Satan was motivating Peter in a way that Jesus would not accept. And so he was speaking directly to the Spirit and telling Satan basically to get out of the way, to not come between Peter and Jesus. So one of the things that this reminds us of is when we have a relationship which is safe and it's based on attachment, we're connected. Things are not always going to go right, but when we have that relationship based on attachment, I have more flexibility to have a difficult discussion with another without the other taking it wrong. So the other says, you know, "I feel threatened by what you just told me. Get thee behind me, Satan." For most of us, if we heard somebody tell that to us, it would kind of hit us pretty hard. But Peter was able to take it from Jesus because Peter knew that Jesus loved him. There was an attachment between Peter and Jesus. Jesus had created that attachment. So now when he had to give a hard message to Peter, there was room for Peter to take it without throwing up his hands and say, I give up. You know, this is too hard. I've heard this before. And, you know, I'm not going to take this. You follow? There was an attachment that gave them some emotional flexibility so Peter could respond and stay attached to Jesus.
So this clip, I want to finish the last part of it. What I want you to see in this is that when she decides to run away, go back. You can do it. Her attachments, go ahead and skip to, I think it's 51. Anger's in control, and her attachments are starting to disintegrate. And so they show this by these islands that talk about her family island and her friendship island, and all of these things are disintegrating. And we see her whole panel, which is her emotions, shut down. We see them just start to go black.
Hey, that sounds nice.
We're taking the bus, nitwit!
There's a bus leaving tomorrow. Perfect.
A ticket costs money. How do we get money?
Give
Mom's
to...
purse.
You wouldn't.
Oh, but I would. Where was
so
it
she steals
saw it
money.
Last?
So this is part of who she was.
No.
A good little girl.
It's downstairs.
She ends up taking her mom's
Mom
credit card to buy the
mess?
Ticket.
They can pay to get us out.
Skip past that. Oh, wait, yeah, show this. So this is
How
the part
this?
Where...
Isn't this nice? You can see everything from up here. Look, there's inductive reasoning. There's deja vu. There's language processing. There's deja vu. There's critical thinking. There's deja vu. Hey, look at this guy's memories.
Hey, that was a good idea. About scaring Riley awake. You're not so bad.
Really?
Nice work. Oh, I can't wait to get the old Riley back. As soon as we get there, I'm going to fix his whole mess.
Whoa, is this Riley? He's so big now, so he won't fit in my rocket. How are we going to get to the moon?
Oh, it's that time in the twisty tree, remember? The hockey team showed up, and Mom and Dad were there cheering. Look at her, having fun and laughing. Oh, I love this one.
I love that one, too.
Not a girl. Now you're getting it.
Yeah, it was the day the Prairie Dogs lost the big playoff game. Riley missed the winning shot. She felt awful. She wanted to quit. Sorry, I went sad again, didn't I?
I'll tell you what, we can keep working on that when we get back, okay?
Okay.
But I just don't understand. Why did our moving van even go to Texas? Multiple customers. Well, we were promised delivery on the 5th. Uh-huh. Excuse me, isn't there any way that you can rush it?
So what happens at this point is the things inside of this little girl are crashing. She doesn't feel heard. Her mom keeps telling her she needs to be cheerful and be, you know, just make it through this. Just keep smiling. Just keep, don't let Dad know you're sad. Don't express anything. Just keep, you know, keep up a good, you know, outside. And inside, this little girl is missing her friends, missing all kinds of things, and not really allowed to show that sadness. She's just hiding it inside. And so at some point, that's when the anger took over. And obviously, she made a terrible decision. She runs away. But then there's a point where as her world starts to crash and she's sitting on that bus, she almost goes numb. And we have to understand that when that happens, we're not going to make really good decisions from that numb place. So we have to understand how our emotions are working. And then all of a sudden, they tried something and they let sadness go up to the helm. And everything was shutting down, like she was going black. And she's sitting on the bus and just in despair. And sadness was allowed to be a part of this. So sometimes we have those conversations, those ARE conversations that are difficult and that are sad. And we're able to say, this is what was going on for me. This is what it's like for me or whatever. And it's safe enough that you can do that. And then we find go ahead and go to what's the video, what's the slide right before that? Okay, so in this moment of despair for this little girl, she didn't have a safe haven to go and talk to her mom and tell her what she felt. She was told to just be cheerful. She wasn't able to be flexible. She got really upset and overwhelmed. Nobody was really noticing how sad it was for her. And it caused a complete disconnection. And this is just a story, but it gives us an example of what happens in that crisis. Okay, sorry. So when we're in that really difficult time, we need something, and we know this scripture, right? This is something that we've read and we've thought about, and it's really important to us. But in that really tense moment, that soft answer, that calm demeanor, is not that jumping to a conclusion, but it's slowing it way down and asking God to help us to not jump to a conclusion and guess what this person is thinking, but to ask God to help us to start slow and to start soft. So again, the ARE conversations are, those are times where we can plan rituals around separation and reunion. And these are things that help us to stay connected long haul. So if you're just running out the door and you don't say goodbye to whoever's in your family, it's almost like a little bit of lack of respect. So if you take that time to just make a connection and say, hey, I'm going here, or I'm doing this, and have some physical contact and say goodbye. Identifying those attachment issues and the recurring differences is also part of an ARE conversation that helps us to not just sort of gloss over them or pretend they're not there, but have those conversations. So we're going to plan for a healthy conflict resolution, because conflict does happen. We're going to misunderstand each other. Somebody's going to be 30 minutes late. Something's going to happen and something spills or whatever. So we have to plan for it. This particular method was really wasn't, it wasn't invented, it was observed. And so this particular person was studying, I think there was a team of them, they were studying couples and families and relationships, and they noticed that some people were able to solve, they'd give them really hard tasks, they were able to solve them, and then other people, they got in a big fight. So what they did was they weren't really trying to teach them what to do, they were observing what the people did where they were able to solve the conflict. And this is what they used. They used kindness, generosity, and then I added respect. And when we use kindness, which is that soft start, and generosity, which is I'm going to put myself in the other's shoes, and respect for the relationship, it slows everything down. The voice changes, the rhythm of what you're trying to say slows way down. Go ahead. And so there's two sides of the fence, and I couldn't find a fence, but this is the best I could do. So on one side of the fence, and we've talked about this a lot, is defend and blame. You know, we know that doesn't work. I'm going to defend myself and then blame and defend and blame and defend. You can see kids do this all the time. I did not. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. And there's just that back and forth and back and forth. And they go around in a circle, and if you're in the other room, you're like, I can't listen to this anymore. They're not getting anywhere. It's not resolving. It's just going in a circle. So the other side of the fence is that slow start, a soft answer, turneth away wrath, that generosity of I'm going to put myself in there. Kids have a hard time with this because you have to be mature to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and then have respect. But we can model this and teach the children how to have that soft start, that generous outlook on what's going on. Maybe there's some things I don't get. And then that respect so that the voice stays respectful. And we're not throwing what we call the baby out with the bathwater. You're not getting so upset that the relationship is like, pfft. You're saying, no, this relationship, no matter who it's with, even somebody at work, is important. We want to be able to keep that relationship intact. So this is, oh, go ahead.
Not a question. Let's say two people are in a discussion and it's involving something difficult and they find themselves in this defend and blame cycle. How do they get out of it?
First, you have to recognize it. And what happens is as you hear yourself wherever you're at, friends, family, store, whatever, you'll start to notice this. And defend and blame goes in a circle. So the first thing would be to notice it, to be aware of it, that it's happening. And then step out of it and say, okay, slow down, time out, lower the voice, calm down the speed, you know, of the voice, and say, so I think we're misunderstanding here. Something's going on. I don't know what it is, but so tell me what you meant. You know, you slow it way down. And you don't go on the attack. You go maybe on the offense or whatever, trying to receive it instead of attack.
Sometimes I've observed that when you might receive a comment from another and it feels like blaming, like and often these things start with, why did you? Why did you? And sometimes that can feel like a criticism or a blame. Why did you? But sometimes what the other is doing is actually bidding for your affection, bidding for your attachment. They really are asking you to come close to me. I can't feel you. And so this question comes out almost in a negative way sometimes, as an accusation or a criticism. But underneath this, so many times, really, when two people are trying to work together or when two people love each other, what's happening is it's a negative bid for attachment, not a positive one. But if we realize, really, the other is asking me to come close, it's just coming out negative. I don't have to respond now defending myself. I have nothing to defend. I simply recognize the other really is asking me to come close, and they're hurt, or they're having a difficult time, and it's coming negative. So if I realize they're really asking me to come close, then I don't have to blame, I don't have to defend. I can realize, aha, this is actually a bid for attachment. And then I can respond in a way that draws me close and doesn't push the other away. See, that's how that negative cycle starts. It's defend and blame cycle. I perceive blame, I defend, I blame. Defend, blame, defend, blame, defend, blame. That doesn't go anywhere. It's a negative cycle. And to get out of that, you have to break that cycle somehow.
So this is something I use with kids, families, couples. It doesn't matter. If we can understand that the other side of the fence doesn't work with that defend and blame thing, then we're halfway there. Because if we even notice it, it takes a while to even notice it. And then you start to recognize it, and then you kind of get caught in it again, you know, because we're just almost like our culture is trained that way. But you can really train yourself to be on the other side. Now, sometimes kids, you know, they're watching us all the time, even grandkids or family members. So even if it's been that way for a long time, you can still shift gears and still model something healthier. So another thing that helps the love to stay alive is to say out loud what you're grateful for. So many times, sometimes I just think this is the enemy. Somebody will do something wonderful, and we just think in our head, boy, that was great. I sure appreciate that. But we don't ever tell them. So maybe we make something for dinner, you know, or whatever, and you're just like, oh, that took me all afternoon. And then they're out. And you think, wow, you know. So if that goes on back and forth in the relationship over and over and over, you start to feel kind of worn out, you know. But if we take the time to say out loud, not ooey, sugary, gooey, whatever, but just genuine, you know, I really appreciate that you did that. That really helped. That was nice. That's it. It doesn't have to be fake or, you know, too much. But saying out loud, go ahead, what you're grateful for helps those relationships to stay healthy. So another thing is noticing and holding on to turning points of connection. So let's say you get a chance to do some time together with a sister or with a friend or, you know, somebody in your family. But to remember those sweet times and notice those and hold them precious, because, you know, in a couple weeks something's going to come up and it's going to be a challenge. You want to remember those sweet times. And that seems like, of course, but if we're not aware of it, sometimes they slip. You know, we don't hold on to them. So holding those positive moments to remember help us to get through the difficult times. So this is something that it kind of made me laugh. Those of you that were in Chicago might have heard it, but it really reminded me of a moment of attachment that was very special and that this couple held on to, and it was very important to them. And it was Brother and Sister McCraney. And he said, he was talking about the family and marriage, and he said that he was sitting at the kitchen table, and I could get it wrong, but you'll get the general idea. He was sitting at the kitchen table, and his wife was busy, and she was just wiping, and he grabbed her hand, and he just held it and looked at her. And she went, oh, you know, just like this little moment of he was connecting with her and saying, thank you, you know, for keeping everything and cleaning it, and just said, thank you. And she went, and then went on her way. And later she told him, that meant so much to me that you noticed and that you took just a split second. I mean, how much time did that take? 18 seconds at the most. He just grabbed her hand and appreciated her. And that was something she could hold on to. So the next time maybe there's some conflict, and you know, they probably don't have any conflict, right? But if there were, then she would be able to hold on to that and say, you know, I know he really loves me. He's 30 minutes late, but I'm sure he really loves me. You can hold on to it for later. So celebrating the positive moments, this seems kind of silly because we think of birthdays and anniversaries and those big moments, but I'm talking about regularly just touching each other. So, you know, Brother McCraney mentioned that and how important it was to them. And, you know, like I said, it just was a couple of seconds. But regularly and deliberately holding and hugging or connecting with that friend or family member, letting them know, you're there, I notice you, you're important. Writing short notes, texting something kind, just taking a moment. And that keeps that relationship connected and healthy. Special dinners out, those are kind of obvious, but lunches together, something where you're doing something together, but without the cell phone or without the negative talk or without the problem about, you know, the mortgage or something. You're having that time, but you're really allowing that, you know, eye contact and that time together, counting it precious. Engage in family rituals together. As saints, we get that opportunity. Haul the kids in the car, off to church, you know. But those things, as the kids get older and grow up and move on, that's important to them. Those camping trips, those, you know, times in the backyard, those times doing things, that's really important to them. I had one of our kids write back and say something that he was appreciative about our family. And you'd think he was the one that gave us, you know, many challenges, but he was writing how important different things were to him. And I thought, okay, you know, it took a while, but this is good. So those things are important to our family. And of course, we know that we need to stop what we're doing at times in the morning and in the evening and have devotions together. And it doesn't have to be that you do a play and, you know, it's this big elaborate thing with puppets. And it doesn't have to be that. It has to be that they know that the Word of God is important to you and that they know that you're going to stop and use this time, mom and dad, together. Use this time to share the Word of God as a family. It doesn't have to take 4 hours, but it has to be important.
It's not just families. If there's a couple in the house that at some point during the day, whether it's in the morning or the evening or both, that those two people share devotions together, that's really important.
Go ahead. So another thing that helps the relationship to improve and strengthen is learning something new together. Even if it's with your kids, with your friend, learning something new together is really, it kind of gives another new dimension of that relationship. There was a time where some of the sisters learned toll painting. I think it was called Toll Painting. And we spent a lot of time together learning that together, and it strengthened our friendships as we were going through when we had little ones. And it was a really wonderful time. I enjoyed that. I remember that clearly, how important that was. So it's the same for all of our relationships. So, yes, of course, we recognize birthdays and, you know, anniversaries and those things. But I think sometimes if they seem humdrum, then they feel humdrum to that other. But when we make it fun, or we make it special, or we make it where they understand that you're excited for their birthday or you appreciate them, then there's that enthusiasm is very helpful. So publicly recognizing the other as special. So there was an example of a woman that, and they had a lot of conflict in their marriage, and it wasn't here. And she was introducing her husband, and she said, "This is my dear one, my husband." And that man was surprised by that. And he took that she called him her dear one, her husband. And it just helped him through a lot of things, because he remembered and realized, she thinks I'm important to her. And it means a lot. So publicly recognizing the other as special. And we know that in our culture, you know, we are on overload a lot of the time. Too many things going on, too many places to be, and it isn't helpful. So if we can tone back some of our places to be and things to do, we're going to help our children learn how to calm themselves and how to be able to, regulate themselves. So don't accept it as normal. Overload, overworking, all of that. Don't accept it as normal, because it hinders our relationships. It hinders our families. Again, when we talk about our attachment, I always go like this, the attachment, right? So to have that healthy attachment, we need to feel safe with each other. So we need to understand that those attachment issues that we have from before are not what's happening now. We have to separate that. So when you reach for each other and turn toward each other and turning away, instead of turning away, you have to recognize if you're being flooded, if you're having a really difficult time in a moment, that it's probably about something else, maybe not just that event. Or if it doesn't match the event that's happening, then you'll know that you need to separate that out. So having safety in the relationship fosters cooperation, openness, and flexibility within the relationship. So even with your kids, when they feel safe that mom will hear them or dad will hear them, and it's not babying them or giving in to everything, I don't mean that, but that they can come to you and say, something happened at school, or something happened in the neighbor's house, or, you know, something happened. When they know that they can come to you and express what's going on, that's going to foster cooperation, openness, and flexibility, and you're going to be able to have a better relationship. So daily issues, and this is important, daily issues don't have to be the screen where attachment issues play out. So if you have attachment issues, which a lot of people do, we have things happen to us. Some things go on in school and, you know, siblings, stuff happens. But you don't want to let the daily issues of life get mixed up with those issues that you need to resolve or work out. So we generalize. This is interesting. If you think about from the time you were born to now, you had thousands of small interactions with siblings, parents, cousins, neighbors. And what happened is all those little interactions cause you to have carefulness about certain things, or fears about certain things, or, you know, things you don't want to be involved in. So what happens is from all of those interactions that you experience, which is different from you, you're going to bring to your relationships all of those little interactions. And that is your model for how to love and care for others. And sometimes that needs some exploring, you know. It also guides our expectations. So David was raised differently than I was raised when it came to maybe how we celebrated holidays or birthdays. And so as we got married, I thought it was going to be the same as, you know, in my family. And it wasn't the same. It was a little bit different. And so my expectations were like, oh, okay, that's how you do it. Our family, it was like gifts and you know, cards and all this kind of stuff. And it was just more simple in his family. And so my expectation was like, oh, okay. But I never said anything. I didn't say, you know, that hurts my feelings. You know, this is how we did it in my family. So maybe you could buy me a present, you know, or something. So
I buy presents.
But what I'm saying is our expectations from the way we were raised is different. And you can't expect your husband to read your mind. And you can't expect your wife to read your mind or your friend to read your mind because they came from a different way of doing things. So these models guide our expectations. But when you feel valued and remember safe in the attachment and the relationship, you can bring up difficult topics. We talked about that last week. When you feel safe, you can say, I'm going to bring out this thing that I've not been talking about because I was afraid that it would, you know, upset you or make you angry or, you know, we would not speak to each other for a while. When you feel safe and you've got a healthy attachment, you can bring up those difficult topics. And that's the beautiful thing about this is healing takes place in a safe relationship. So when you get the things ironed out, you know, some of the ways of solving conflict and things like that, and you're able to have those ARE conversations and turn toward each other, there's a lot of healing that happens, not only in your relationship, but in your other relationships. It's something happens, and I think that's how God wanted us to be with each other. He said to love one another as I have loved you. So there's a lot of, we know he forgave us, we know he went the extra mile for us, right? So those are the kind of things that he wants us to do. So there's things that we can do together as we try to keep this love alive. So when you think about things to do together, there's three adjectives I want you to think of that describe a challenging time in your relationship. And you might have to do this for several relationships. So three adjectives that describe a challenging time. It might be sad, lonely, you know, kind of isolated. And then another thing you can do is think of two verbs that describe what you did to change it. Okay? I prayed about it. I turned toward that one. I wanted to resolve it. We know that that's how the Bible teaches us. We're supposed to go to that one and resolve it. And then the last one is one key moment when you felt a shift, when it felt different. So these are things that we can do to look at our relationships, but also if we just ignore and just hope everything gets better tomorrow, it probably won't. We have to be aware of what's going on in that relationship. So the next slide. Another thing, as you moved through this information and as things start to improve, you can think of, as time goes on, three adjectives or emotions that express your relationship now. Or if you have a healthy attachment, what are the things about your healthy attachment that you can express now? Two things you're doing to maintain your relationship. They don't maintain themselves. Just like that language I told you, I put Spanish down after I get back from Cuba and then I can't remember and I have to start all over again. It's the same thing with a relationship. You have to keep working at it. You have to keep trying. You have to keep having those conversations and turning toward each other. So two things you're doing to maintain your relationship. It's good to be aware. And one thing that you're most grateful for. So these are things that we can do. You can sit down together and go through these. Maybe you don't want to dwell on the negative. Maybe that will take some time and go back to it later. But those things that you're grateful for, let that one know. So this last part here is where the brain, this is Riley's brain where these emotions are, they send sadness up to the controls. And this kid is shutting down. She's in the bus. She's headed out of San Francisco. She's going to take a bus ride to Minnesota on her mom's credit card, which is terrible, right? If our kids ever did that, that would just be horrible. And so what happens here is the attachment of this little girl with her parents is what helps her heal. And that's what we wanted you to see in this part.
Okay. We will. Her teacher hasn't even seen Riley all day.
What?
What was she wearing last? Do you even remember what... Riley!
Oh, my goodness.
We were worried sick. Where have you been? It's so late.
Again, that's showing how, I mean, it's just a kid's story, but it shows how things don't always have to be perfectly happy and jolly to get through something. Sometimes they had to send sadness up and be able to resolve that difficulty, but it was the attachment that allowed a safe place for the little girl to say what was going on in her, you know, how she was sad and missing Minnesota, and then the dad was able to share. And in that attachment, in that safe place, I mean, you could see them all hugging each other, but in that safe place is where the healing took place. And I don't know if you noticed, it was kind of quick, but they created, and see, all these things had crashed in her mind. All these friendship island, family island, all these things that were important to her had all crashed. And now, did you see that new one that went up? There was the Golden Gate Bridge. So it was a new part of her that was stable and strong, and it involved where they lived, which was in San Francisco. So she was able to heal. They didn't move back to Minnesota, but she was able to heal with her parents, with that healthy, strong attachment. And she had to say what was going on. She couldn't pretend to be happy anymore. So in conclusion, we're all wired for connection. Friendships, marriages, siblings, parents, we're wired for that healthy connection. And we can keep our relationships healthy. And the rusty parts, we can get out the WD-40 and, you know, fix them. We can resolve them. Relationships that are struggling can heal. God made a way for us, and we can heal. We don't have to stay in sadness or in feeling isolated or feeling not heard. We can heal those parts of our relationship. And healthy relationships enable further healing. And they also model for our children and our family how to heal and how to get through problems. And so this seems to change everything. It really does. It changes our outlook. It changes our ability to work with souls. It changes our ability to parent our children or grandchildren or whatever. It shifts everything because it feels so hopeful. And it feels like there's a way for us to make it through without disintegrating into a heap. And that happens. It's hard. But I think having this kind of hope, we know God allows that hope for us in our spiritual attachment. But in our relationships, there's that hope. Does anybody have any questions? No questions. Okay,
thank you very much. We're finished, and next week we'll continue this. Tonight kind of was a beginning of strategies for improving a situation where there might be a bit of a difficulty or a raw spot, and there was a lot of ideas in here on improving relationships. If you want to go back to these slides, they're on the website. My wife gave you a couple of slides where she said there are some definite things that we can do together to strengthen a relationship. And if you'd like to remember what those are, you can go back to the website and you can read them over again. Okay, so let's be dismissed. If we'll all stand, we'll close in prayer.